Well, it's May 28th, 2023. The time is 16:51 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you. This song is from 1978. It's Al Stewart. It's the follow-up to his Year of the Cat album from 1976. And it's called Time Passages, this song.
Bye.
Well, that was 1978. I remember that was the year. Well, it's 75 I went to university, so 78 I was going back for fourth year university, staying on Stanley Street in the basement apartment, 61 Stanley Street in Kingston in that year. It's interesting because time passages. Again, this song, I remember it as though I were still in first year university, but it wasn't available then. It was, of course, we had in 1976, we had Year of the Cat, and I really didn't like Time Passages when it first came out because I liked Year of the Cat so much that it was different. This was different from Year of the Cat. It took a long time before I would appreciate this song, but I'm not sure if I should turn on my filters. I think the HEPA filter, I want to turn it on. So bear with me for one moment. Something I didn't think of, but there's no allergies, so I didn't think of it. However, the allergies build up over during the day. I'll run it on a medium setting. I've been working on watch straps today, a lot to do with watch straps. Got some new watch straps. Mainly because I didn't have any 21 well no that's not true in this case it was 20 and 22 millimeter that I was buying, because I was aware that I didn't have any more bracelets, so it's not on either of the watches I'm wearing today. But I put a new bracelet on Crow, and I got a new bracelet that I'd never seen before with a butterfly clasp, and it's beautiful. It's a highly polished stainless steel, and I put it on Ellie, and the problem was Ellie was on a NATO strap, but it was only a 20 millimeter, and that's still only a 20 millimeter because I don't have any 21 millimeter bracelet, nor do I have a NATO that's 21, that's thin enough to work with Ellie, because she doesn't have a lot of room in the lugs to get past the spring bars, even when you use a thinner spring bar, and I'd rather use a heavier spring bar. So I put this new bracelet on Ellie, and I think she looks really good with this bracelet, but I think I should really replace it with a 21 millimeter. And I've been buying a lot of new vitamins and spent all my money on vitamins. I'm not sure if I have enough to buy any more bracelets for my watches just yet, but I don't have the proper 21 millimeter bracelet for Ellie yet, so I have to order that. I think I'll do that afterwards. But another reason not to do it is I may want to shop some more for some other options. In Greek, the letter Zeta. This is Wild Road, Part 2, Chapter 10, Paragraph 5. In the English, it's the letter Z. Has been either interpreted as having pronunciation ZD or DZ from classical times. I just noticed pronunciation is spelled wrong there. So that the TS of Sorthrus would possibly fit DZ, and thus Z, where T and D are closely related. As is commonly taught in linguistics. So if TS can become DZ, then TS can be also replaced by the letter Z. The second king of Dynasty 3 of Manetho, Sorthrus, is possibly thus Zorthrus, which resembles Zoroaster from having the consonants S, T, and R was in its end part. Quoting Mr. Bryant's volume 2, page 118, quote, Eusebius says that Osiris was esteemed the same as Dionysus and the sun, and that he was called Sirius, end quote. He prefacing this with, quote, Zor, Sors, Shur, Sihor, among the Ammonians, always related to the sun, end quote. Adding that it was also esteemed and received worship. I thought I saw some steam or smoke in the kitchen, but it's just that my glasses have a bit of fog on them. Let me smudge. It's a smudge. Excuse me while I clean that up. So in the summer of 1978, I was working at Atomic Energy again for J.R. Johnson again. I worked for him three summers, 76, 7, and 8, in the medical division of the Atomic Energy at Chalk River. So it was esteemed, that is, the sun was esteemed and received... Didn't I close that? Oh. Okay. The sun was esteemed in ancient Persia and received worship as Zoroaster or Zoraster, Zor-Aster in ancient Persia. See what happened here. Okay. Let's find out what that is. Oh, I don't want that popping up in my current window. Let's see. No, that email didn't come in just now. I don't know what that is. Let's look at my archive. That noise indicated something. Just verifying that there's no new information, that there's something I need to know. I don't see anything. So I don't know why I received a message. It was a delayed noise. I thought I closed the email, but I didn't close the application before I started the study. I meant to. The Ammonians were the descendants. So the sun was worshipped in ancient Persia as Zor-Aster. And the Ammonians were the descendants of Ham, son of Noah. Am or Ham, right? The Ammonian name is from the name Ham. Cush was one son of this Ham, the father of Menes. Cush was. And the Ammonians were descendants of Ham. To the extent that Osiris related to the rising of the star of Sirius in China in 2772 BCE, a 63-year reign for Menes may end 2709 BCE, and 27 for Thoth end 2682 BCE, 27 years after 2709 BCE, since the BCE years count backwards. Whether Thoth is a real king or the shadow of the Tor, the rise of Sirius in Egypt followed events in Shinar, it seems. Of course, it would, because we know the rising of Sothis moves south on as far as the occurrence of that rising on Thoth 1 in the Egyptian calendar. as time passes, it moves south. So that in the north, the rising of Sothis occurs some years earlier, in other words. It seems that the rise of Sirius followed events in China, but it not only seems, it did. So it is not hard to understand the history. We have a credible timeline to back up the theorizing. The Sothic rising at Nekha in Egypt in 2745 BCE, where the Narmer palette was found, coincides exactly with the dispersion of 2745, and thus shows an agreement of Bible chronology with astronomy. That's another remarkable thing. The Nekhen rising in the place of Egypt called Nekhen, which is somewhat further south than Memphis, for example, or I believe is it in between Thebes and Memphis? I'm trying to remember where it is now. But it coincides at that latitude with 2745, which is the dispersion date. And that's remarkable because maybe the Narmer palette was created by Nimrod himself, called Narmer, similar name to Nimrod. And maybe this palette was made because of the dispersion that had occurred. But it appeared on the palette as though there were an artistic depiction of an eclipse. So the palette may have been made for the purpose of documenting the eclipse over the Ark site in 2774 BCE also. We've discussed that. We haven't gone into it, but it's in the article Orient Express, the Ark of Urartu and the Orient Express. And thus, anyway, because of this coincidence with 2745 at Nekhen, it makes the Narmer palette look even more credible as having to do with Shinar or Nimrod or something of that nature. But it's not at the Tower of Babel in Shinar, it's in Egypt. But the agreement with the rising of Sothis at Nekhen with the dispersion date is, and we know that Nekhen was where the Narmer palette was found. That's remarkable because Narmer seems to have been this first king of Egypt or the first king of Shinar or somebody with those kind of credentials, which is absolutely astounding. The date would coincide for the rising of Sothis with the date of the dispersion. It's incredible. And thus it shows an agreement of Bible chronology with astronomy. Ancient astronomy, as we have seen, was very advanced and greatly aids our understanding of the chaotic time in man's history at the earliest idolatrous worship. The astronomy and idol worship are studied in attempts to fill in what is lacking of these times in the story found in the Bible and to compare them. As Mr. Bryant so astutely points out, where accounts are concurrent. So we try to compare them when we have concurrent accounts, such as at Nekhen, for example. It seems to be exactly concurrent with the dispersion as far as the rising of Sothis. That doesn't mean that we know when the Narmer palette was created. We don't know exactly when the Narmer palette was created. And it may have been exactly 2745 BCE, but we don't know that. So that's the end of our study for today in the Wild Road article. And our proverb for today, little children, is from Proverbs 27, verse 3. The heaviness of a stone and a load of sand, but the vexation by someone foolish is heavier than both of them. It shows how serious it is when we encounter a stupid person. The vexation by someone foolish is heavier than both the heaviness of a stone and a load of sand, both of which we know are very heavy. So, we're going to read Exodus and then we're done for the day. Exodus 37, Bezalel now made the ark of acacia wood. 2 cubits and a half was its length, and 1.5 cubits its width, and 1.5 cubits its height. Then he overlaid it with pure gold inside and outside, and made a border of gold round about for it. And after that he cast 4 rings of gold for it, for above its 4 feet, with 2 rings on its one side and 2 rings on its other side. He next made poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold. Then he put the poles through the rings on the sides of the ark for carrying the ark. We just talked about the ark of Urartu, the article. And he went on to make the cover of pure gold. Now the ark of Urartu refers to Noah's ark. It's a different ark. The cover of gold, 2.5 cubits was its length, and 1.5 cubits its width. He further made 2 cherubs of gold. Of hammered work he made them on both ends of the cover. 1 cherub was on the end over there, and the other cherub on the end over here. He made the cherubs on the cover on both of its ends, on the cover, on both of its ends, and they came to be cherubs spreading out 2 wings upward, screening over the cover with their wings, and their faces were one to the other. The faces of the cherubs proved to be toward the cover. And he proceeded to make the table of acacia wood. 2 cubits was its length, and 1 cubit its width, and 1.5 cubits its height. Then he overlaid it with pure gold and made a border of gold round about for it. Next, he made for it a rim of a hand breadth round about and made a border of gold for its rim round about. Further, he cast 4 rings of gold for it and put the rings upon the 4 corners that were for the 4 feet. The rings proved to be near the rim as supports for the poles for carrying the table. Then he made the poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold for carrying the table. After that, he made the utensils that are upon the table, its dishes and its cups and its bowls and its pitchers with which libations would be poured out of pure gold. Then he made the lampstand of pure gold. Of hammered work he made the lampstand. Its sides and its branches, its cups, its knobs, and its blossoms proceeded out of it. And 6 branches were running out from its sides. 3 branches of the lampstand out from its one side, and 3 branches of the lampstand out from its other side. 3 cups shaped like flowers of almond were on the one set of branches with knobs and blossoms alternating, and 3 cups shaped like flowers of almond were on the other set of branches with knobs and blossoms alternating. That is the way it was for the 6 branches running out from the lampstand. And on the lampstand there were 4 cups shaped like flowers of almond with its knobs and its blossoms alternating. And the knob under 2 branches was out of it, and the knob under 2 other branches was out of it, and the knob under 2 more branches was out of it, for the 6 branches running out from the lampstand. Their knobs and their branches proceeded out from it. All of it was 1 piece of hammered work of pure gold. Then he made its 7 lamps and its snuffers and its fire holders out of pure gold. Of a talent of pure gold he made it and all its utensils. He now made the altar of incense out of acacia wood. 1 cubit was its length and 1 cubit its width, it being 4 square, and 2 cubits was its height. Its horns proceeded out of it. And he overlaid it with pure gold, its top surface, and its sides round about, and its horns. And he made a border of gold round about for it. That's the altar of incense. And he made for it 2 rings of gold down below its border, upon 2 of its sides, upon 2 opposite sides of it, as supports for the poles with which to carry it. After that, he made the poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold. He made additionally the holy anointing oil and the pure perfumed incense, the work of an ointment maker. That's the end of Exodus 37, and that's the end of our study for today. You notice that the two rings were only needed, there were only two rings needed for the altar of incense because it was four square, meaning it was equal width and length. Therefore, it would balance relatively easily with just two rings, whereas the table, which was longer than it was wide, and the Ark of the Covenant, which was longer than it was wide, they both required two rings on each side, or four rings in total, one at each foot, one for each of the legs or feet of the table or the Ark, so that it would remain balanced when the poles were used to lift it up, having been put through those rings. That would keep it in balance. And the altar of incense only needed two rings. Evidently that was sufficient. Just on opposite sides, not corresponding to its feet, as in the case of the Ark of the Covenant, which we know was a very, very, very important object to Israel. The Ark of the Covenant, and there have been movies made about the Ark of the Covenant. For example, even in the modern day, we see movies, action movies like Indiana Jones, which feature the Ark of the Covenant. And we see, a lot more interest besides in the Ark of the Covenant. And of course, the lampstand is quite a well-known object too. And then there's the table. This may have been called also the table of showbread, but it was a table where they were provided with a surface on which they could work to do things like pouring out libations and things like that. And so there were dishes and cups and bowls and pitchers and things like that also that were kept on the table. Now, is there a table of showbread? Or is that the table of showbread? There's the altar of burnt offering. Right. Right. I think that is the table of showbread. I'm not sure. Let's look up the word showbread just to see. Okay. Right. The table and its poles and its utensils and the showbread. There we go. So that is the table of showbread with all its utensils and so on, including the showbread, which is kept on the table. The loaves of presentation, they're called, or the bread of presence is another way of putting it. So that's all for the study. I've been really busy since I woke up. I have a lot of work to do keeping track of what my watches are doing, because I'm very interested in knowing how well they keep time. And I have several, or maybe just two, which are non-hacking. By the way, Rolly doesn't seem to run anymore, but her sister, I've named her Sissy. I've named Rolly's sister Sissy. She's a Cadison watch. She's Rolly's big sister. She's 40 millimeters compared to 36 millimeters. But Rolly's not running anymore, so Rolly stopped today, and I couldn't get her started. So, But I think that there may just be something in the mechanism. If I can get the, if I take the mechanism apart and clean it and put it back together, or take it apart and see what's wrong with it, take it apart and put it back together, even just that alone, because it shouldn't be dirty. But if I just take it apart and put it back together, it might work. She might work, but I wouldn't have much confidence in her ever again. So that's the problem. So I can't rely on her. She was $138. And Sissy was only $102. I just checked it. Not $104, but $102. So Sissy is a great, my greatest bargain. She's got the same design as Rolly has. She's the Rolex imitation of the Rolex Day-Date, also called the President's Watch. And it's a beautiful, beautiful watch with the ice blue dial. There's just something about that watch, the way it looks. And it's not only that, but the legibility of the dial with the blue second hand is really legible. You can see the second hand in very poor light. It's legible in very poor light. And that's what is the thing I love about it the most, being able to see the second hand in poor light. So, but I'm not even sure, because I love all of it. I love the whole package. It's just wonderful. I want to show you Sissy. I can get Sissy for you here, possibly. I'm trying to get the case open, which is difficult. There. Okay, there's Sissy. That's Sissy. Right, there's Sissy. So Sissy came on her own bracelet, and I love the bracelet, but if you ever take these bracelets off, they're extremely, be warned, if these are a solid link, a solid end link here, where the bracelet connects to the watch, if it's solid and it's a piece that is, it falls off when you take out, it's held in by the spring bar. If you have one of those bracelets where the end link is held in by the spring bar, when you take the spring bar out, it may not be easy to get it out, but it is going to be very difficult to get it back in, I believe. I can say that with some certainty. But it depends on how tight it fits. If it's a very tight fit, did I take this one off? I'm trying to think which watch I took my... I took the Pagani off, but I didn't want to put that bracelet back on again. But the one I took off that was like this, I don't think I tried to take this bracelet off because I like this bracelet too much. But I tried to take one of my bracelets off. It could have been the Steel Dive. And then I wanted to put it back on again. That's Willie here. Because Willie has the same sort of manufacturer's bracelet again, with a very tight fit. So it's such a tight fit, a beautiful conforming lug surface, but when you take it apart, you may never get it back together unless you realize and figure out exactly how you need to do it. And it's, even then, it's extremely difficult to do it. But I did it, and I was very, very, very enlivened and self-esteemed. You know, I became greater in my own eyes by accomplishing that feat, because it was a very difficult feat. Just normally you use a spring bar, and that's all you need to use in this case also, is a spring bar. But how you position the end link and how you insert the spring bar and how you hold it while you're doing that are what distinguish, in terms of difficulty, that replacement for the bracelet of that sort of watch in particular, this one from the replacement of the spring bars on any other watch normally, which is very easy normally. Or, I mean, it's not easy for some people, I'm sure. It's quite difficult for some people. But if that's easy for some people, this is, or this type of bracelet, such as Sissy has, it's extremely difficult. But I'm not sure if Sissy's as difficult as Willie was, in terms of, it's partly the clearance. I think it is a tight clearance, though, yeah. When there's no gap, then you can't angle the end lug so as to get the spring pin in on one side first. All you can do is, so you can't put it all the way in the hole. You've got to just put it near the edge of the bottom lug. Well, that's the way I do it anyway. But inside the bottom lug, near the edge, hold it there, and then push down the top of the spring bar and get it in under the top lug. And once it's between the two lugs, then you move the spring bar into place so it can click into the two holes. And it's so easy to lose the grip on that and to lose the focus on that when you're doing it and lose the position of the spring bar. Just, it's so easy to lose it and have it come away from the lug and not stay compressed long enough to get it into the holes. So it's a very difficult process. I mean, it's extremely difficult. It's one of the most difficult mechanical procedures I think I've ever done. I mean, it's really difficult. So anyway, but I mean, probably when I get good at it, it won't seem very difficult. So Sissy is not, you see the red, can you see the red in the Sunday? Sunday's in red. It's the only day of the week in red. And that's because it's the Miyota movement. Miyota movement has the color red for the Sunday. That's not true of the ST16 Seagull movement, which also has this wide day at the top, such as on Rolly. But the Miyota movement has red for Sunday. And this is a non-hacking movement, which means I can't stop the second hand, so I can only get to within a few seconds of accuracy. It's 10 seconds slow right now, but catching up. So once Sissy catches up with time, then I'll try to regulate her so she doesn't gain any more time. Then I can just hack the minutes, or just set the minutes, and I can't hack the seconds, so I can't adjust the seconds, so I'd rather keep the seconds running close if I can, but that's not probably going to work. I'm just waiting until the seconds comes close in case I can actually succeed in regulating Sissy well enough so that I can control her second hand accurately just by positioning the watch. And accurately enough to keep her in sync with the atomic time. That's my goal. But all my watches, my goal is to have them running in sync with atomic time. That's my goal. And that's a very lofty goal, I believe. It's a very lofty goal. And just happens to be the goal that I have. Because I don't enjoy seeing my watches lose time over days and weeks, you know. But really doesn't, it really doesn't matter. You really can't stop them from being mechanical watches, because that's what they are, and they're not perfect in that way. But maybe I can improve on what I'm doing right now. And the other thing is, it takes a few days to know whether you've succeeded in regulating a watch, you know. So it's not really, or it takes at least a day, but probably a lot more than that. Whereas on the other hand, quartz watches, they pretty well run at an accuracy of about a second a day or better. So you don't really worry about it. You might reset them every few months or something, because they're half a minute or a minute out after a month. I mean, after several months. So you don't even... I rarely ever set my Casio quartz watch. I rarely ever had to set it. She doesn't even have a name. My old Casio. Cassie, I can call her, I guess. Yeah. But she is accurate compared to these watches. But no, I have two watches still, three actually, that are running. Willie was running. That's Willie. Yeah, Willie was only 1 second fast today, and Willie had been running exact time. So Willie's now synchronized. This is a PT5000, a Hong Kong precision-made movement called the PT5000, made in China, in Hong Kong. So, I mean, that's unbelievable. And because it's so inexpensive and it's so precise. But that's because of how I regulated it and set it so that it would not lose or gain time using my time grapher, the Weishi 1900. So I ordered that when I ordered the first watches that I got from AliExpress. I ordered the time grapher right at that time. And you can put the watches on the time grapher, and when you're regulating the watch, when you have the back unscrewed, you can put the watch on the time grapher with the dial down and regulate while you're watching the time grapher to see how many seconds per day you're losing or gaining with the dial down and the back open. And you can then adjust the little lever for the speed regulation on the movement just to speed up or slow down the balance wheel. It adjusts the length of the spring is what it does. When you adjust that little lever, that changes the length of the balance spring, is my understanding of it. And that makes it run faster or slower, depending on whether you tighten up the spring or loosen it a little bit. So it's fairly simple. But there's also, you have to be careful, there's another adjustment lever. It's for the beat error. And that one you don't want to change, unless you have a beat error that needs to be adjusted. Because the beat error should be as close to zero as you can get it. But even 0.5 milliseconds is acceptable, or 0.6 milliseconds, some people say. So when I'm regulating a watch, it might show 0.1 millisecond beat error in one place, in one position, when it's dial down. But then when I use the rotating feature of the articulating stand to put that to put the watch in a crown up position or some other position, I can then look at the result on the beat error as well as the result for the speed of the watch, both. But sometimes the beat error is more than half a second in some positions, while it's, you know, essentially zero in some other position. So the beat error depends on the positioning of the watch, how it's situated relative to it's not anything to do with the Earth's magnetic field or anything like that, unless the watch is magnetized. Oh, by the way, that reminds me, my new Longines, Ellie, she's called. Ellie has a silicone hairspring. And I know when she was made based on that, but also based on the fact that, well, I don't really know when she was made, but it looks like 2022 was when she was made, because I can't find any other mention of the movement called the 687.5. The L687.5, I can't find it before 2022. In any watch that I can find online. So it looks like it's a 2022 edition of the movement, the 687. There's also the 678 movement, which is almost the same thing. It's just the 687.5 has a 66-hour reserve, power reserve, 66 hours. That's the most I've had. I wanted to buy the Hamilton day date with the wide day at the top that was about $650 Canadian, and it had, What was I just saying? Let me think. Oh, yeah, the movement. Yeah, right. Talking about the movement of Ellie, the 687, the 678, they're both the same movement except the power reserve. And the Hamilton that I didn't buy, it was $650. Instead, I bought the $4,000 Longines, but the $650 Hamilton, which would have had the same day date at the top, I was going to buy that watch instead of buying the Cadison, for example, or the other one, the Annie, the Bauhaus watch, which also has the same wide date at the top. But the movement on Ellie is the 687.5, L687.5 in this watch, 66-hour power reserve, which is impressive. But the if I bought the Hamilton with the top date, wide day at the top, day of the week, that would have been 80 hours, and it would have been less money. But I'm not really interested in power reserve because I intend to just wind my watches anyway. I don't see the issue with power reserve. I'll just wind them, you know. So I'd love to have more power reserve, but it's not really doesn't matter to me. So the other thing I notice is the power reserve now on Star. The power reserve indicator has finally dropped because I decided, you know, I was careful not to wind her too much. Now you can see the power indicator is pointing down. It's about half, or a little more than half actually, but it's about 30 hours now remaining of power winding in the spring. Winding power or spring power. So if I wind her, that will go up, right? Like, let's see, maybe I can even show you. Watch this. See her go up? Yeah, she's going up. There she is. See that? That's the power reserve indicator on this beautiful Orient Star watch. And she has an open heart. Watch has an open heart, so you can see the balance wheel ticking inside. Well, you can if you have good enough light. Yep, I can see it. And she indicates that it's the 28th of the month, and the moon phase is looking like we're getting towards the full moon gradually, but I don't have that displayed here. I didn't set the moon properly on this watch. I didn't set the moon properly. You're supposed to set it to a full moon and then count how many clicks from there, equivalent to how many days of the month. And I didn't do it that way. I did it by estimating how the crescent was in terms of size. That's how I set this eight. I set it around day six or seven. Six, I think, but six, yeah, for this one. I got this on lunar day six, this watch. This Star, beautiful watch, whom I call Star. She's an Orient Star automatic. She's self-winding, but most of my watches are self-winding, but they also can be wound. That's what I didn't like about the Seiko 5. Seiko 5, you cannot wind it. You cannot wind it, even if you want to. It's only automatic. And I have, Gully needs to be wound. Gully she has to be wound. There's no automatic function for Gully. And do I have another watch like that? Let me think. Is there another watch that I have to wind? No, I don't think so. I think it's just Gully that requires manual winding. All my other watches are, let's see. It's open a file. Let's go to 2. Bang. Watches. Watch family. Here. Right. Oh yeah, but that's the wrong file. That's the old group. That's what I used to have. Come back. 6. This is the new, up-to-date watch family file. So we have here, from the top left, we have Dusty. And that is self-winding. Crow is self-winding. We have Phoebe self-winding. Moppy is self-winding. Cammy is self-winding. Gully is not self-winding, but you need to wind her. Willie is self-winding. That's the PT5000 that I love so much because it's such an inexpensive and acclaimed. It has some acclaim to it as a watch. And I mean the movement as a movement. Rolly doesn't work, but was self-winding. But you could wind any of my self-winding watches because I didn't buy any that you couldn't manually wind. Star is self-winding. Ellie is self-winding. Annie is self-winding. And, is that true? Let me think. Am I wrong about any of these? No, because that's a Miyota. Yeah, the other thing I wanted to say is that Annie has also the same Miyota movement, but it's hacking. Whereas the movement in these last two, Annie and Sissy, Sissy has the same Miyota movement. They're both self-winding. But Sissy's movement does not hack, so I can't stop the second hand. So I can't synchronize. So I've got 2 non-hacking. Or maybe more than 2, but I have 2 because I have Gully's non-hacking and manually winding. Sissy is non-hacking and automatic as well as manual winding. So all the watches are automatic though, except for Gully. And there are 2 non-hacking watches, Gully and Sissy. No, 3. 3 non-hacking because Phoebe doesn't hack either. That's right. So I have 3 non-hacking. But that's Phoebe has the Russian movement, the 2416. The Crow has the Hamilton movement H21. Moppy has the Seiko movement NH35A. Cammy has the Orient movement F6922. Gully has the Seagull movement ST1902. Willie has the PT5000 movement from Hong Kong Precision, as I mentioned before. Dusty, in the top left, has the Sellita SW200-1 movement from Sellita. Rolly, who doesn't run anymore, has the ST16, or had the ST16 Seagull movement. Star, from Orient Star, has the F7M63 movement. Ellie has the movement designated as L2.773.4.78.3, including, that's of course, including the dial color in the 7.8 and the strap, the type of strap, which was a leather strap when I bought her, which is the 0.3, the 3, so the 783 is the strap. So, and the color, the white color is the 7.8. So I believe 9.2 is the black dial, but Ellie has the designation L2.773.4. That's the main designation, apart from the other colors and things. But she comes with the movement. The movement inside her, though, as I said, was the L687.5. That's the movement. So I didn't mention that until, I did mention it earlier, but I didn't mention it. Since we're going through the movements for all of these, I needed to mention the movements. It's the L687.5 for Ellie. For Annie, the movement is the Miota 82-85. The same as for Sissy, but in Annie, it's a hacking movement, so the second hand can be stopped. It's still the Miota 82-85. In Sissy, same movement from Miota, but it must be an older version which doesn't hack, it seems. It likely is, anyway. I mean, that's the only reason that would make any sense, since they updated the 82-85 to include hacking at a somewhat later time. At some point they updated that movement. So that's the end of our discussion and our fun for today. Had a wonderful day. I hope you did too with the study today. And I'm working continually to learn more about my watches. I love them. I love them all. They're beautiful. And I really do think that now that I own a beautiful, beautiful watch that was essentially like a dream, which was Ellie with her amazing complications. She has incredible complications. She has a 12-hour chronograph with a 30-minute dial indicator at the top, the 12-hour dial indicator at the bottom, a 24-hour large hand on the left, the 9 o'clock position, the second hand, the smaller hand, also on the left. She's got the crescent-shaped pointer hand that points to the day of the month. She points to the 28 on my watch currently. And she's got, these are the chronograph hands on the 30-minute and the 12-hour indicator. She's got the chronograph seconds at the top. The long second hand is the chronograph. The small seconds on the 9 o'clock position, that smaller hand there, that's the running second hand. And more than that, she's got the day of the week in the 12 o'clock position, Monday there, shown. And January as the month is shown. So the name of the month is given also, with the day of the month in the crescent-shaped hand pointer here. It points to a number on the dial that goes from 1 to 31 for the days of the month. So the complications make that a very beautiful watch. But it's not a beautiful watch in terms of having style or gold or any expensive materials used to manufacture it. It's just, on the contrary, it's more of a field watch, I believe. It's rugged, it's stainless steel, you're not going to worry about scratching it. All my watches are going to get scratched. I know they are, so it's not really something. It's not really something that I am going to try to prevent. Maybe with Annie, because Annie doesn't have a very large bezel, and she doesn't have a crystal that she's not sapphire. I think that Sissy has that's the Caddison watch, has a sapphire, which is incredible. On the front, the sapphire, and she's got a glass back, a mineral glass on the back, I think. But this crystal for Annie is a mineral crystal. Is that the hardened one? Let me think. Which one has the hardened? Which one is K1 hardening? I can't remember. The acrylic, it's an acrylic for Phoebe. It's sapphire for Dusty and Crow. It's sapphire for Moppy. Sapphire for Tammy. Sapphire for Gully. Sapphire for Willie. Is Gully? Yeah, because it was an expensive watch. Something like $365 Canadian dollars. So sapphire for Gully, I believe. It was sapphire for Rolly, and sapphire, I believe, for Sissy, but mineral for Annie, and mineral for Star, I believe Stars, no, Stars of Sapphire, that's right, because Stars are very expensive. It's a $2,000 watch with sapphire crystal. But I mean, Orient often economizes with mineral. They often do. And it's but mineral with K1 hardening is pretty good. I think that's what Annie is. And then sapphire, of course, for Ellie. So most of them are sapphire, by far. All of them, essentially, except for Annie, I believe, are sapphire. And Phoebe. Annie and Phoebe, that's right. Phoebe is acrylic, though. Or Hardlex is another name for something similar, as far as the crystal goes. And you can scratch acrylic much more easily, but you can also polish it and make it smooth again. So Phoebe is scratchable. And the mineral has had, the mineral glass for Annie has had K1 hardening, which is going to prevent scratches, I believe, in most cases anyway. But I think mineral, I'm not sure, is mineral stronger than sapphire as far as strength goes? I'm not sure. It also depends on the doming. If there's a doming effect, that can strengthen something structurally. The shape of it, the curvature of it can strengthen it. So it's another thing. If it's convex, in other words. So there are many factors. Most of my watches are sapphire crystal on the front, and that's a modern development, that synthetic sapphire can be made fairly economically, at least economically enough that we can still afford to buy the watches. The Moppy was $400 at the end of things, tax and everything included. You know, $170 for Phoebe, a very good bargain for a Russian watch with a 2416 movement, and $102 for Sissy, which is incredible, for a watch that contains a Miyota movement. It's amazing. The price is amazing. And a sapphire crystal. And stainless steel. And mind you, it's non-hacking. But some people like non-hacking, because when a watch is hacking, it means you're ramming a blade or a piece of metal up against the balance wheel to stop it. You just suddenly slam against it. So some purists don't like hacking. They think the second hand should be continuing to run all the time. And that, so non-hacking is not a bad thing. It just makes it hard to synchronize exactly. That's all. So we are done. And I love you very much. Have a wonderful day. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening and watching. Praise Jehovah. Seek first the kingdom, and all the necessary things will be added to you. May we listen to the great teacher, Jesus. And for me, it's May 28th, 2023, 1756 hours. And this is Willie and her friend Moppy saying bye for now.